This is the Creative Agency Podcast,
where we explore the strategies,
aspirations,
methods, and mistakes
behind growing and maintaining
a successful
creative agency.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris, and I am broadcasting from Murmur Creative headquarters in Portland, Oregon. Today is a slightly different kind of podcast because instead of interviewing a creative agency owner or entrepreneur that I don't know, I'll be interviewing one that I know very well, my brother, Andrew Bolton. Welcome.
Thanks.
I figured it was important to do this podcast because I'm often talking about on the show the things that we do at Murmur Creative and sort of comparing those things to how things are done at other creative agencies. I figured it would be great to share with our audience the story of Murmur Creative, how Murmur Creative came to be, and there's no better person to interview than my brother on that subject. One thing that I thought we could start with that many people are always asking is, what is behind the name Murmur Creative?
So when I was 20 years old, I got a sort of a freak bacterial infection that infected one of my heart valves. None of the doctors actually knew what was going on with me for a really long time. And I just got really, really sick. After 3 weeks, 4 weeks or something, they figured out that I had this horrendous blood infection in my blood and it had gotten into my heart valve and it was kind of had wreaked havoc and was eating up the heart valve. So, you know, they put me on crazy amounts of antibiotics and killed the infection. But after the fact, the heart valve was pretty severely damaged. So at 21 years old, I got to have an open heart surgery and they fixed the valve. So yeah, good as new, but it left me with a little bit of a heart murmur.
Hence the name Murmur.
Hence the name Murmur Creative. But it's funny, that wasn't what actually made me think of the name. I was, you know, I spent about a year desperately trying to come up with a name for the company. And man, I just looked a million places and thought on it forever and it was driving me crazy. And I was about ready to give up the idea of having an agency just for that reason. And one day I was flipping through some old records and I came across the REM record Murmur and I thought, man, that's a good word. Like that would be a cool, you know, kind of a cool name for an agency. But then I sort of had this thought of like, you know, but everybody would ask me what it meant and I don't have any real, you know, connection to that word. And then it sort of dawned on me that I did in fact have a connection to that word. So yeah, that was the moment. Yeah, it felt really awkward for a while and then now it just seems right.
I remember for a long time we were bouncing around the word or the name Meadow Creative, that was one of the front runners mm-hmm. for the name.
Yep.
I think Murmur is much better.
Yeah, I think it's a little more unique, but I'm sure that probably we looked too and there were three other Meadow Creatives because that was usually the issue when we thought of something we liked.
And there are a few other Murmurs, but maybe not another Murmur Creative.
No, I don't think it's just a Murmur Creative, and I don't, as far as I know, there's not another sort of marketing design agency called Murmur Creative.
Mm-hmm. So let's get a little into how Murmur came about and how we got to where we are today.
Well, so I went to Portland State for graphic design, and my last year there, I was living in a house with some friends, and a friend of mine, Caitlin, was working at Laughing Planet Cafe, and one day, I guess she was talking with one of the owners, Franz Spielvogel, and he told her that he was looking for a web developer or a web designer, and asked if she knew anybody. You know, back then there were three Laughing Planet locations, and Franz was just a partial owner back then.
And Laughing Planet's like a health food burrito store, kind of fast food place that caters to families.
Yeah. So Caitlin quickly told Franz that she did know a web developer, web designer, which was a total lie because I had never developed nor designed a website at this point and, you know, was just kind of starting to think about designing websites. And I think I was, maybe I was in, you know, my first couple web focused classes at that point. So, you know, with all confidence, she said, oh, my roommate, he's great. You should meet with him. So she passed him my email. He emailed me and I, you know, went in there and I lied through my teeth about how I was, you know, very experienced and knew what I was doing. And luckily for me, Franz had a ton of other sort of print design work. He needed new menus. He needed all this stuff. And the web project was sort of pushed off, I think, for, you know, almost a year or so. So by the time we actually got around to doing the website, I did, in fact, know how to design websites. And I'd worked with some developers to develop websites. And
but you were already doing some contract work while you're in school.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, Franz was, and Laughing Planet was sort of my first client, and I did a little bit of work for him while I was still in that last year of school. By the time I finished that year of school and I was graduating, I remember Franz, I think, was hoping that I would stay working for Laughing Planet, but he didn't exactly have a full-time design position for me, so he actually helped me kind of, he introduced me to a couple guys who had, you know, small design agencies, and they were looking for a little bit of freelance work. So I continued working for Laughing Planet, and, you know, I worked at a few other small agencies just doing, you know, different design stuff, and kind of slowly started.
But you never really had an agency job. You were sort of just doing freelance.
No, I was just freelancing for small agencies.
Just to give a little perspective, you were not straight out of college, out of high school. You had...
No, I was on the 10-year bachelor plan, bachelor degree plan. So I had taken my time through various junior colleges and had moved up here from Santa Cruz, California. So yeah, I was taking my time.
Gotcha. And you had work experience. So you worked in restaurants and stuff like that.
Yeah. Basically, you know, once I had been working for... I had Laughing Planet as a client. I was working for a few different agencies, and slowly I kind of started to build up my own client base where, you know, I could quit working for the smaller agencies that, you know, paid quite a bit less and just work for my own clients. I met Tristan, who's our web developer, in those first couple of years. And, you know, once we started working together and really, you know, knocking out some really high quality websites, I think that just really one thing led to another, and you know, we were in pretty high demand.
Now he was working not as an employee but as a freelance contractor well.
Exactly.
You rented a office in a creative space, right? Or a desk in an office?
Yeah, we kind of bounced around for a little while. I met Josh Berger from Plasm Design. His agency at that time, he was I think about to go to work for ID Branding, and sort of shut the doors for a while on Plasm, the agency, not the magazine portion. But he was needed to sublease his space in the City Signs building. So I moved in there ended up in that building for a couple of years. And so that's where I met Tim Acock, who was the photographer at Murmur Creative for many, many years.
And photography kind of ended up being an important part of Murmur because you use custom photography in a lot of the websites that you built. And I think that especially now, like, custom photography really lends itself to website design. And it was kind of a fortuitous relationship.
It's true. Yeah, photography is always an issue when you're doing web design for small business because everybody, you know, so many small businesses think they already have great photography and they usually have horrendous photography, or they have okay photography, but it doesn't really, you know, fit the bill for what we've designed or what we're trying to design or what they're trying to, you know, communicate. Having that flexibility to create images specifically for a website, I just, you know, it just always looks 100% more professional and intentional, and it just makes a huge difference.
And so you had, you know, no real experience running your own business, but the clients were coming in. I mean, the nice thing about when you went to PSU, they did give you some business tips and things like that that you sort of started out with. If I remember correctly, like, you sort of had an idea how to charge clients. You had some ideas about how to, you know, create contracts and stuff like that that you'd been taught at PSU.
A little bit. Still a lot of crash course stuff. Remember, you know, calling my dad a lot, who would run a small business, and asking him so many questions. And, you know, I remember even the first time anyone asked me to send them an invoice, I almost, I sort of didn't even know what they meant exactly. And was like, well, I finished the job, give me some money. And they just, you know, said, of course, I will send you a check as soon as we get an invoice. And,
like, what the hell's an invoice?
So yeah, I was pretty green. But no, I had a lot of, you know, a lot of great resources. You know, I had some really good mentors at PSU. I definitely would call on them when I needed to.
So how was business coming in at this time? Like, was it just sort of word of mouth, referrals?
Yeah, I think pretty much 100%. We certainly weren't doing, I feel like at some point in the early days, we did some sort of almost cute attempt at marketing, which is like putting some ad in the weekly or something. But no, I don't think anything was effective other than just, you know, we were making really nice websites that were really inexpensive, I think, compared to what most people were charging. You know, we probably should have been charging more, but, you know, I just didn't know any better. So we were making really quality websites that, especially for businesses like restaurants and bars and, you know, things like that, that was a little better than they could afford most places. So
what were you charging for restaurants back then?
For a website? I mean, honestly, I feel like we probably did some websites for $1,000-$2,000, something like that. You know, probably less for you know, friends. I would say for a long time, I kind of have this memory of a Murmur website went for about $3,000 to $5,000. And if we had a $5,000 website, we were kind of losing our minds with excitement. That was huge.
That's awesome. So what were the services that you offered at first?
You know, it was a lot of the same stuff we do now, sort of without the marketing side of things. So logo design, you know, all sorts of print materials and branding stuff, and then websites, you know, mostly brochure sites, a little bit of e-commerce. But yeah, I mean, we were sort of at that point, I think we kind of said yes to everything. So we got in over our heads at a certain point. At certain points, we would just, you know, read up on it. We didn't know what we were doing. I think at a certain point, we actually made a social networking website for a client, which was probably our biggest mistake ever. But we created a completely functioning, operational social media website. Luckily, didn't have huge success, and so it was never tested to its full
capabilities.
but it worked, and you could do everything you needed to do.
When did you realize that Murmur was going to be, you know, more of a business and not just a freelance operation?
One of the things that kind of made me realize that maybe this thing had the potential to grow was I had hired Tristan, who was a developer. He worked with me for years, and you know, he was, you know, I was paying him as a contractor for the first several years. I finally did, you know, figure out what it would take to actually hire him, and I put him on payroll, and I got a payroll service and all of that. But it was just him for a long time. You know, at a certain point, we just got so busy that we needed help, and you know, I would get some interns from PSU now and then, and that was really helpful. But I think there was a certain point in which we just, that just wasn't cutting it. And we got an intern, Zipporah, who is currently an employee at Murmur. And she just was so great that, you know, I just sort of felt like, okay, this might be the moment where I actually hire someone who does something that I do. That felt really significant that, you know, when I hired Tristan or when I hired, you know, Tim to do photographs, or if I hired Chris to, you know, help with SEO and all these things, those were things that I certainly had no idea how to do. So it wasn't a question. But when I hired Zip, it was like, oh wow, I'm hiring somebody to do the things that I do, which felt like if we had enough work that we could actually hire more than one person to do one thing, that seemed like a sign that things were changing.
And that was how many years ago?
Not very many. I want to say 3 years ago. Double check that. But
yeah. So the last 3 years is most of the growth has happened. And we're at 10 people. Is that right?
Yeah. I think there's nine employees and myself.
And so hiring Zip, your first design employee, was a big shift. What were some of the next big shifts for Murmur Creative?
as we, you know, started doing more and more work and the work started looking more and more professional, we would start getting, you know, requests for proposals and bid requests from larger and more professional companies. We got a RFP from Melvin Mark, which is, you know, one of the largest corporate real estate companies in Oregon, and certainly the largest in Portland. They've developed half of, you know, the buildings downtown Portland, so that, you know, they're sort of responsible for the Portland skyline. And so, you know, we were really surprised to see that they had sent out an RFP to us. That said, you know, companies send out RFPs and, you know, they just go down a list of creative companies, and, you know, we just figured we ended up on that list. So I didn't think much of it. I read through it, and it was an RFP that would have taken us days and days to put together a proposal that met all of their criteria. So, and I think one of the first questions was something about how large is your agency? And I just thought, oh, forget about it. This is just going to be a huge waste of our time. So I, you know, ignored it. And I want to say, like, a few months later, I got a call from someone at Melvin Mark, and they said, hey, we were just wondering why you didn't choose to respond to our RFP. And I said, oh, you know, we're kind of a small agency, and it looked like you guys were looking for someone larger. And she said, no, we're actually really interested in hearing from you. We really like your work. So, you know, we were super flattered and excited. So, you know, we scrambled and we put together a proposal and sent it over to them. And, you know, I think the following week, they sent us an email back and said, you know, thanks so much for your proposal. We've narrowed it down to three companies, and we'd like to offer you a chance to come in and pitch to us, you know, in our big skyscraper of an office. which was great. But something I have not mentioned is that I'm completely petrified of public speaking. That's always sort of been a little issue, being the owner of a company, is that I never want to give the pitches. I want to design the logos or do the art directing, and I love meeting with clients and building relationships with clients. But when it comes to the real formal stand up in front of a boardroom and give a pitch, It's just about my least favorite thing. So, you know, where I should have been really excited, I just immediately was sort of panic stricken. I remember lying in bed one night and thinking, God, what am I going to do? This just sounds horrendous. And it all of a sudden dawned on me that I knew someone who could do that job really, really well. And maybe I didn't need to be the person who gave that pitch. So I was thinking of Mary Nichols, who is currently our account director. And, you know, Mary and I had met many years before at Laughing Planet. She was the marketing director there when I, you know, was still in school. And so I, you know, we've been working together ever since. And she's, you know, she had a small consulting firm called Karmic Marketing. And, you know, Karmic Marketing brought clients to Murmur all the time. So Mary and I, you know, had a long running relationship, and she's, you know, sort of has all those skills that I do not. She is just totally amazing at pitching and talking with clients and all these things. So it sort of dawned on me that maybe she would be willing to come and help us out. And so I think I held my breath until I called her, and to my delight, she was all about it. She was super excited and said, yeah, let's do it. And so we met, and, you know, she researched everything that there was to know about Melvin Mark, and she happened to be close personal friends with Charlie Hales, our mayor, who knew all the guys over there. And so she even met with Charlie and, you know, got all this insider information. And so, you know, we put together this presentation that was, you know, unlike anything we'd done before, because we basically just kind of walked in, shook hands, and chatted before. That was our pitch.
And this is actually where I become a little more prominent in the story too, because while I was working at my former job at CD Baby in marketing, I was becoming more and more involved on the side with Murmur Creative. For some of these big pitches, I took a day off work in order to go in for
That's
Murmur.
True, because at this point, you didn't have a website meeting with without people asking about SEO. So, you know, I could sort of dance around the subject, but we knew in this case we needed the big guns. So yeah, we had Chris, I think, called in sick or did something so that he could come to the meeting. Yeah, we went down there. It was kind of amazing. Mary just gave the presentation and killed it. We had a Q&A afterwards, and you know, we had everyone there who could answer all their questions. So it went really, really well. Still thought there was no chance in hell we were going to get the job. And, you know, like, I don't know, a couple weeks later, I got a call from them and they said, we've decided to work with Murmur Creative. And that was really, really exciting. And I think it was shortly after that that, you know, Mary and I sat down and I said, could you always do that for us? because I don't want to. And you are awesome at it. So, yeah, that was definitely a big turning point for us. And then, you know, finishing that job, watching it go live, it, you know, having other people find it, I think it kind of bumped us up into the next tier of business.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long after that that both Mary and myself came on. Mm-hmm. We were nervous. You know, we didn't have enough SEO work to basically pay my way into the business, but we thought we were probably going to. And you guys were so busy, you knew that I could sort of fill in places where work needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And so I quit my job and came on. And the first couple of months, we were pretty nervous, you know?
Like, yeah. Terrified, in fact. It's kind of felt a little bit like that with every single hire. I think you especially, because again, it wasn't a primary service that we had offered, so we were sort of expanding our offerings, and yeah, that felt a little nerve-wracking. But no, every I think we've grown cautiously and carefully, but with every hire, I think that you just hold your breath until like a couple payrolls go out and everything seems to be evening out. But yeah.
And so is it just the last 2 years that Murmur has really sort of pulled ahead with a little bit of profit at the end of each year?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny because you start thinking about it so differently. You know, before it was sort of Murmur's income was my income and I had to pay a few people out of that income. And, you know, now that there's 10 of us, it's a totally different ball game. And, you know, we profited a little bit last year, you know, sort of just enough to give everybody a little bonus and then have, you know, maybe have about a month of cushion. You know, it wasn't anything crazy, but that was different. You know, that was totally different because there was nothing like that before. We were just month to month and there was no bank account or anything like that. And then, you know, this year was kind of the same. I mean, really at the end of this year, you know, we grew, I think we hired 3 people this year, maybe 4. You know, it's kind of balanced out, you know, after bonuses. Again, it was just pretty much enough to leave in the bank to kind of make up for the growth this year and keep us in with just enough of a cushion to mm-hmm. feel comfortable.
But I mean, it's year over year, the actual amount of money that Murmur is bringing in has been pretty significant.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the business has doubled in size probably 3 or 4 times year to year throughout.
And what did we do this last 2015 was like, do we do $500,000?
We did, I think close to 600,000 was kind of where we landed, which is, you know, it's interesting. It's still, to me, it sounds crazy. It sounds like an enormous amount of money. I know, you know, we're a really small agency, and I know even for an agency with as many people as us, I think a lot of agencies make, you know, way, way, way more than that. But no, that still seems like the sort of crazy amount of money that I'm just not used to dealing in.
Coming from a freelancer to...
I mean, we used to manage between Tristan and I, you know, I think there was a year that maybe we did 70K or something like that was split, you know, Tristan, me, and then a bunch of freelancers. Yeah. And you know, those were slim times. But it's really interesting and crazy to see, kind of watch it evolve so quickly.
Well, and one of the things we haven't really talked about is the move into this building, which we did less than a year ago. And the Washington High School building, because you can't see it, is this beautiful renovated brick high school building that is full of creative spaces. And it definitely upped our game. It's something that when clients walk in, they say, wow, I can't believe this place exists. How long has it been here? Like, your office is beautiful. You know, we have a small conference room, but it's got a big glass entryway. And there's something special about walking into this building, walking into this office. We have a lot of wow factor.
Yeah, it's got a lot of character, and it feels very, it's a lot of character of Portland. You know, we were in a space in our previous space. I want to say it was terrible square footage, but it was probably 700 square feet. Anyways, we were bursting at the seams in our old office. I mean, it got really cramped really fast, kind of the point where it was a little comical. People were sort of sitting on top of each other. So we knew we needed to move. We started looking around. You know, I'd heard about this building being renovated. It sat empty for, I don't know, 30, 40 years or something like that. So I was excited to check it out. We came here. It was one of the first places we came, and it was just, you know, we were sold. We were like, where do we sign? And it doesn't matter how much kind of thing, even though, of course, that we weren't really in a position to make that sort of deal. But we really were. I mean, it was just hard for us to imagine. We looked at a bunch of other places, and of course, nothing compared. So, you know, we did. We paid a lot more for the space in this building. We probably could have gotten, you know, another third of the size of this place somewhere else for less even. But it wasn't nearly this exciting. And you know, the space was being built out. So we got to sort of design the space, which was really exciting. And, you know, tell them where to put the glass wall for the conference room and where to put the kitchen sink and all that. I think a little more than double the size of our previous space. So, you know, that was definitely a big moment for us. And I think it was good. I think for like the employees and everything, it was just an exciting thing. And we were all really excited. And, you know, I think felt a lot of ownership over the space.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's sort of an interesting point that if you are a design agency, and especially an agency like Murmur that basically prides itself on design over almost anything, that having a well-designed space, having a place that has a little bit of an awe factor can really improve your conversion rate, can really improve, you know, the chances that when someone walks through this door that they end up signing on the bottom line. There's, you know, a few things I feel like that you can change about your agency that really have that effect. And I would say that probably your website itself and your place of business are probably like big conversion factors when it comes to clients, besides, you know, quality of your work and personality and all those other things. But I think those two things, those sort of almost physical factors that can have make a big improvement.
Yeah, it was a big investment, and I think it's paying off. You know, we don't have a client come in that the first conversation we have isn't about what a cool space it is, and, you know, and then we get to tell a little about the history of the building, and there's a really cool rooftop deck that we get to go up to, and then there's also the building itself has a venue in the center of the building. The old high school auditorium is a 900 seat music venue.
So what do you view as, and I have a few thoughts on this myself, the biggest challenges that we face at Murmur Creative?
You know, I think probably kind of winning larger clients. I think it's one of those tricky things where, you know, without examples of larger client work, it's can be kind of hard to land those larger clients. And, you know, we've done a few larger jobs for larger companies like Ticketmaster and for Melvin Mark, but there's still sort of that, you know, when your average client is, you know, small business, then, you know, people kind of view you that way. And I think another thing is that since I came straight out of school doing freelance and just went right to work and sort of building Murmur, and honestly, most of my hires were straight out of school, there's not a lot of agency experience in the whole office. So, you know, I think we do things as well and better than a lot of large agencies. And certainly we're a lot more affordable, but we don't know how they do it. So I think There's sort of that, you know, we don't come across quite as professional in certain instances, you know, and we've come a long, long way and we've learned so much. And, you know, I'm not nearly as intimidated by larger clients as I used to be, but I think there's still some holes there. And I think, you know, there's certain things that clients ask. We talked about this the other day because we had a experience in a meeting where, you know, the client's really drilling you for sort of, well, what's the bottom line? How's our bottom line going to improve? And, you know, I think we all sort of sat there slack-jawed because, you know, we don't have an answer to that, or we don't have... tons of data. You know, we know that our clients have had huge success, you know, and we know that we've been a huge part of that. You know, Laughing Planet Cafe has gone from having three locations to having, you know, I think they're in the high teens and they're in four or five different states. You know, I'm not saying that's all design did that, but, you know, we played a part, and our clients in general are very, very successful, and we know how to measure that in some ways, but, you know, I think that that's probably a weak point.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, we need to have those case studies. You know, we have sort of on our website, which might be some sort of brief case studies, but nothing with numbers. And I think that that's something that we need to start bringing to the table. This client in particular was basically asking us, what is our ROI on this project?
Yeah.
Which is a lot to ask without being able to see their financials.
Yeah. And you know, again, it's like, I don't know what an agency, what a larger agency would do in that situation, but my guess is that they would at least have an answer ready to go, you know. And I think the answer probably is like what you just said and what we talked about afterwards, which was like, well, how could we possibly, you know, we don't even know how much money they make in a year, so how can we tell them that they're going to make X dollars more, or that right. we're going to improve their business by 15% if we don't know how, you know, has it been 10 years since you've grown 15%, or did you grow 15% from last year? It's just impossible. But again, I think we just sort of looked white in the face rather than
frozen in the headlights a little bit when that question was asked. But you know, like when I interviewed Patrick of Copious, he was saying that they ask for all the financials, they want they get all that data and then they make predictions. I'm not sure that we're gonna do that sort of upfront work for the sort of clients that we have, because the budget doesn't quite allow for it. And, you know, even this guy who was asking us for that sort of information, he doesn't want to pay for it, you know. He was trying to ruffle our feathers, and that's fine. Sometimes clients will try to ruffle your feathers, and you just have to deal with
they
it.
They kind of want to see how you handle that situation, exactly. The other thing that, you know, continues to be, I don't know, a struggle, but a process, is just refining the way that we do things at Murmur. So, you know, we have a process for all of our services. We have a logo design process. We have a website design process. We have a, you know, bringing in new business process, and they all need a lot of improvement. You know, they're all 100 times better than they were a year ago, and they all need to be 100 times better next year. So I think we realize those are just ongoing things. And I think that, you know, I don't know that you ever get there. I think, you know, the top agencies are probably all refining those processes constantly as well. But I think ours, you know, we have a lot, you know, where they might be tinkering and refining, we're making huge changes, you know, with the way that we do things. And you know, it's funny how, you know, we'll have some conversation that sort of feels like we're wasting time, and then somebody will say something that just sort of just blows everybody's mind. You know, I'm thinking of that in that Doug Fish interview, he says that, you know, he's never won any work talking about himself, that, you know, it's all about the client. And I think, you know, we had sort of just started thinking a little about that, but that was just this like huge revelation for us. And we looked at all of our presentations and we realized, oh, we talk about ourselves for 30 minutes and then we talk about the client for 5, you know. And so here, and now we're really quickly making this huge change, which, you know, already I think we can see is making a big difference. So there's huge room to improve all of our systems. That said, you know, things are going really well, and the websites we're producing, the final product, I think is really, really strong. So sure, we can improve that too, but I think it's just, yeah, it's just keeping that mindset of just, you know, we can always make it better, and perfection is a path.
Indeed. I mean, the thing is too, is we need to actually, I mean, actually having the free time to do those sort of things, mm-hmm. to look at processes is very new for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, you having just hired a logo designer sort of for the first time gives you freedom to just be art director, not actually be designing, and actually just look at the business and refine the business.
It's true. Yeah. For all those early years, it was always that sort of like, oh, when we get 5 minutes, we're going to think about this, or we're going to do this. And it never happened. I mean, I think that's why probably for 4 years, you know, even though we were growing, you know, we didn't take any of those big jumps until all of a sudden we had a few people around to do the work while somebody else or a couple other people got to actually think about what was happening and look at it and say, oh, you know what, this is really inefficient and this isn't really working out. Once that became something we could do, and, you know, still it feels like sometimes we're all just going as fast as we can and we can't stop doing client work. But, you know, a couple times a year, there's these moments where you go, oh, wow, no one's beating down my door right now. I can focus on the business. Yeah, those sorts of things just make a huge difference. And that's sort of my new favorite part of my job, you know, is improving these things and watching it take effect. And it's really fun.
And I probably mentioned this before, but you talked about our lack of agency experience. And that's one of the reasons for this podcast and to begin with, is that we can talk to other agencies and sort of learn their stories and learn how they handle things.
So this podcast, whether it's wildly successful or completely falls on its face, is going to be great for us.
Yeah, it's going to help us
either,
out.
Either there's a lot of people out there just like us who are going to take a lot away from it, which, you know, is our hope. And I think it will definitely probably be the case. But, you know, regardless, it's just, you know, we want to have those conversations and just see what people are doing.
Yeah, because we can't be the only ones who are curious.
Yeah. I know, those questions and no one wants to ask, but everybody wants to know the answer to.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about the future of Murmur, because it's the new year and we're sort of looking towards what we're going to be doing, how we're going to be growing. What are your goals for Murmur in this upcoming 2016?
You know, so this year is going to be a little different because, the last couple years, we've sort of been really aggressive with hiring and growth of the business. And it's been sort of such a whirlwind. I sort of made the decision at the beginning of this, at the end of last year, and I kind of talked to everybody about it. And I thought, you know, we've been growing and it's been fantastic and everything's going really well, but it's really hard to know what's going on as far as what's working for us, what's making us money, what's making our employees crazy, you know, when everything's changing so rapidly. So, you know, for us, 2016 is sort of going to be our year of staying the same. We have one hire that we've talked about that we're sort of waiting to till the time is right. But we do plan on hiring one more marketing person this year. But besides that, the goal is to pretty much stay the course and just see what happens. Like we said before, you know, we have all these processes we want to refine and things we want to do. But, you know, at the end of this year, I want to be able to look at the year and look at sort of the data of the year and actually hopefully pull something out of that.
Right.
Because, you know, the last few years, it's like, well, how can I compare? I can't compare 2013 to 2014 or 2014 to 2015 because they looked so different. There's just no way. Yeah, it would be like useless. So I'm really excited to sort of see what we can do in a year, you know, just by refining processes and changing the ways we do things, that at the end of the year we can go, oh wow, look at this service is really profitable, this service isn't very profitable, and then start to weigh those things, you know, against whether we enjoy doing them or not and right. Stuff like that.
Right. And that's actually something we sort of worked out in QuickBooks, where now anytime we bill for something, and we probably still a little more refinement in there that needs to be done, but we've sort of moved everything into three categories. We have web, we have design, and we have marketing, and then all the different subcategories. So we can see that, like, you know, a real specific service like doing business cards or something like that, like how much did that make us during the year? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, how much did, you know, social media management, which is something that we've sort of decided we're not going to offer anymore because it was a huge pain in our ass this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're still struggling. We don't do a very good job of tracking hours. So, you know, we're going to have some of that information. And then we'll go, you know, we'll have this, oh, we made X amount of dollars designing business cards. The other piece of that would be how much time did we spend designing business cards? You know, maybe that's 2017. We get really good at that.
Yeah, we haven't been, we had time tracking software set up for a while.
But it's difficult. You know, I don't know. And it seems like it's really time consuming to run the time keeping software. So that's something I'd love to find out from some other agencies, how they make that work for them and for them. You know, we track time for clients when they're working on an hourly rate. But, you know, when it comes to just, oh, we have this website project and
it's a fixed cost.
It's a fixed cost. Then we just lose track. And you know, I think it was in the Needmore interview that Candace talks all about how they keep really great track of all that. And that, you know, so that is not us, and maybe it should be.
Yeah, so we definitely have more to learn. It's been an exciting journey, and one of the nice things about this podcast is we'll be able to keep our audience up to date with sort of things that are going on. We would love to make $1 million this year, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
sort of our big goal. I don't know if we're going to make it.
Yeah,
that would
seems a little lofty without doing hiring, but, you know, Shoot for the stars, right?
Yeah, so we'll let you guys know at the end of the year whether we made our $1 million or not.
Yeah. One of the goals that I have for the company that, you know, sort of, or a couple of the goals that I have for the company are sort of beyond just this year. But, you know, one thing I'd like to do is sort of make an investment in the company and purchase some real estate at some point. You know, we love our space at Washington High School. But, you know, if we do grow, already we're sort of at maximum capacity here at our space. So I think that we know we'll have to move again at some point. And I think it'd be really cool if we could purchase the space that we moved into next. I don't know how realistic that is right now, but I think if we made $1 million,
maybe we
could do that. So that, you know, that's something that I sort of think that I view in our future. Another thing that, you know, has sort of always been my goal at Murmur, and it sort of started with me as an individual, is that, you know, more so than making a ton of money, my goal has always been to do something that I love and do it in a way that like works with my life. I've got a 7-year-old son and, you know, all these things going on outside of Murmur. And, you know, I really want everyone who works at Murmur to have a really good work life balance. And that's definitely, you know, a huge goal of mine, is just, you know, that's really important to me. And I feel like it's, you know, it's what I want the culture of Murmur to be. I don't want really stressed out people working here that hate their jobs. You know, I want people to feel really motivated and excited about their job because they have a good work-life balance. And yeah, I hope that, you know, I think we do a really good job. I think if you compared us to other agencies, I think we're already kind of killing it in that way. You know, we leave, pretty much everybody walks out of here pretty close to 5 o'clock every day, except for Zip, who comes in an hour late and leaves an hour later.
Exactly.
But so yeah, you know, I want people working, you know, 40 hour weeks, not 50, 60 hour weeks. And I don't want them to have to bring their work home with them at night, every night. And I want people to feel really good about what they're doing. Again, something that I just want to always be trying to improve is just each employee's job. I want it to be exactly what they want to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Especially since I'm one of the employees.
Right.
Well, cool. I think we've covered most everything. Do we have anything left? Oh, the three takeaways.
Oh, boy. So what I wrote down was that I think, as far as like advice I would give to other small agencies and agencies that are the few out there that are smaller than us, you know, really focus on doing what you're good at. I think that's probably the main reason Murmur's grown in the last 8 years or so. We just really tried to stick with what we were doing best. You know, we were making logos and websites basically at the beginning, and I was good at making logos, and Tristan and I were really good at making websites together. You know, we tried to keep it to that as often as we could, you know. And now that we've hired more people, we have people with lots more specialties, you know, we're just really, you know, figuring out what those things are and really sticking to them. I would say the other thing would be grow slowly, which, I mean, we keep saying how quickly we've grown, but I think at the same time it was sort of slow. You know, we never took out any loans. We never did anything that was beyond what we could do financially in that moment. So, you know, maybe it's not quickly, maybe it's just carefully, grow carefully.
There was a lot of carefulness. I mean, yeah. There are a lot of weighing options, a lot of like waiting a little bit longer than maybe we needed to,
yeah,
to do things.
And, you know, I don't mean don't take risks and follow your dreams or whatever, but I just think, you know, I feel like we've been sort of slow and steady. It's really paying off. You know, it's not, I can sleep at night because we haven't taken the, and you know, maybe that's a personality thing too, but that's worked really well for us. And, the last thing, which is absolutely huge, is I think choosing the right people to work with and creating a culture that feels right. It's been scary lately hiring a little quicker, you know, and hiring people that we didn't have quite as much of a relationship with before we hired them. But I think we've still been really careful, and I don't know if we just lucked out, but you know, everybody here is really awesome to work with, and I think the culture is really fantastic, and everybody likes to come to work, and like I said before, we like to do things outside of work. So I think, you know, that's probably maybe the most important thing.
Yeah.
Is just, I could just only imagine, you know, having people here that just didn't fit in, or, you know, were really pushing against the grain. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah. And it's a varied crew. We've got a lot of different personalities, but
yeah,
But
yeah, by no means is it 10 of the same person. You know, there's a ton of characters in this place, but we all seem to get along so far.
Yeah. Well, excellent. I think it was a good first podcast of the Brothers Bolton.
You mean I'm going to have to do this again someday?
Yeah, we'll check back in. You know, if we make $1 million this year, we got to come back and talk about it.
All right. Well, if that happens, I'm all over it.
All right.